For the SBS studios in Artarmon, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm recording from. I pay my respects to the Cammeraygal people of the Gurungai Nation and their elders past and present. I also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you are listening from.
Hi, I'm Suraj Kolhatkar. I immigrated to Australia as a child, and I always find myself fascinated by immigrant stories. So on this podcast, I'm bringing you the stories of immigrants reliving their first year in Australia. Everything they felt, from hope, fear, alienation, and ultimately triumph. My guest today is Jewish comedian Peter Mizell from the United States. Peter arrived in Australia in the 1970s, when he heard that Australia was in desperate need for teachers. A two-year visit then turned into decades in Australia.
I grew up in an area called Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper Village.
Right. It is that what is Bedford-Stuyvesant now?
No, Bedford-Stuyvesant's okay. In Brooklyn. This is in Manhattan. This is a great area. It goes from, this area goes from 14th Street to 23rd Street, okay. First Avenue to the river, which is Avenue C.
Yeah.
And it was built for returning servicemen from World War II and a few other people as well. But so there were two requirements, basically. One, you had to be part of a family that had servicemen who were in it, and you had to be a person not of color. You had to be white.
Wow.
35,000 people, not a single person of color.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So when did you see your first person of color?
Cleaning ladies would come from Harlem, and they were mostly African-American. But my first encounter with a black person was on the subway, the A train. And I was about four, because I have a very good memory for back then, nothing now. And I was on the train, and if you go on the subway, you tend to look out the window. You put your hands up to the glass, you look out. And there was another about four-year-old black kid, and we're just looking out the window, and I looked at him, and he was looking at me, and I touched his hair.
Yeah.
Because, I'd never seen that before. Yeah. And it was perfectly innocent. And my dad says, "You don't do that." So I didn't. So we went for the rest of the trip. My family and I got out the last stop. He got out before that. But just looking out that window was a real kind of bonding experience. Touching shoulders. It was just, that's how guys made friends.
Yeah.
And I'm picturing now on a trip back, when I go back and I go to the subway, if there's some black bald guy, other bald guy, and we're both looking out the window going, gee, I remember him. So that was the neighborhood. It was a great neighborhood to grow up in with a few exceptions. It was 40% Irish Catholic, 40% Jewish.
Right.
Did not get along. Got beat up pretty badly as a 9-year-old by a gang of 12-year-olds.
For being Jewish.
You know, they were saying things like Christ killer, which was funny because that day I was in Nazareth and he was in Jerusalem, so I thought I had a good alibi. Plus, 2,000 years had passed. So I didn't really do it, and I was pretty sure of that. So, it wasn't pleasant. But generally speaking, it was a nice area to grow up in.
Yeah.
It felt safe if you stayed out of those areas.
Right. And did you spend your whole childhood in that area?
Whole childhood until I was 18, then went to university upstate New York.
Right.
And then would come back and for reunions and stuff, and that was really...
So you said 18, you left that area and you went to university?
Went to university for 4 years, but, during school holidays and summers, you came back home, worked summer jobs in the 60s and things like that.
What did you study at university?
I studied psychology.
Right.
Which I have a degree in psychology, which allows me to get no jobs anywhere.
you got in early.
I got in early to be. But when I stand on line, the unemployment line, I seem very intelligent. And then I had to go back to university or college to get my teaching degree.
And that's right.
Which is how I got out here.
Yeah, okay. So take me to that. What brought you to teaching and then what brought you to Australia?
I like the idea of a 10-week holiday because in America, you only get...
You're doing teachers no favors who are listening to this going, no.
No, I mean, my dad worked, he worked for years, since he got to America and before America, and he got even at the end of his working career, he was getting 2 weeks vacation.
Yeah.
The idea of working 50 weeks a year and getting 2 weeks off seemed horrific. Yeah. So getting the summer off, I could just sit perfectly still in a closet or wardrobe and just make the time go really slowly.
Yeah.
But it turned out that I liked teaching and I wasn't bad at it. So I stayed with that.
When did you start thinking about Australia and what brought you to Australia?
Oh, university. I got 4 years off what's called college deferment.
Right.
So you go 4 years and not go to Vietnam.
Right.
So a lot of people went to university. A lot of people went to teachers college. Part of it they may not have gone, but nobody wanted to go to Vietnam.
Yeah. What year was this?
I went from 67 I was supposed to graduate in 71, yeah. Graduated January 72.
Yeah.
And that's when they had I was part of the first lottery and my number was 350. So I wasn't going anywhere. I mean, that was good. That was, you know, losing everything, losing this lottery that way, getting a low number or high number, that was great. But a lot of people went to uni, stayed in uni because they did not want to go to Vietnam, which is quite understandable.
Yeah.
So there were no teaching jobs. So, you know, I'd apply. So I'd drive like in the middle of winter looking, you know, for interviews and stuff like this. I did substitute teaching for a while, which was awful. Casual teaching, substitute there.
Yeah.
It was horrible. And then there was an ad in Australia was actually looking for teachers, which was amazing. So I went to the interview. It wasn't very thorough. I mean, I don't know what they were looking for.
This was an interview in New York.
In New York at Rockefeller Center.
Interview to be a teacher in Australia.
In Australia,
that's fascinating.
People coming from, I don't know if they had other places as well in the West, but people coming like from Ohio, stuff, places like that.
Right.
For the interview. And I was accepted. I was on the last plane load of Americans. We came out here. The plane landed after, I think it was an 18-hour trip because it were two stops, something like that. I can't quite remember. And when we got here, there were literally people carrying Yankee Go Home signs.
Wow.
Because they apparently, and there were rumors why, there was a teacher shortage. By the time we came, there wasn't one. But they wanted to give, to take power, this is the rumors, I don't know, take power away from the Teachers Federation.
Right.
And by having extra teachers, they would have that power.
Right.
So for the first several months, I had no permanent class. Yeah. There were too many of us. All the classes were filled.
Oh, wow.
And they sent us to, and this is the thing at the orientation where you sent to, and the first thing it opens up to, it says Green Valley.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. All my dreams have come true. You know, rolling hills, puffy white clouds, sheep grazing. Apparently Green Valley was really bad back then. It was housing commission. And it was considered just, because when I showed it to an Australian in the cafeteria, they said, uh-oh. Turns out it was great. I loved my time there.
Yeah.
The kids I taught turned out to be just fantastic.
Yeah.
I did a show up at East Lakes for Darren Sanders, a festival show. And a pupil came, ex-pupil came, not to watch the show, but just to say hello, which is quite flattering. And she was from the first year I taught. And she's 56.
Yeah.
And is a grandmother, which freaks me out. When I taught her, I was less than half her age now. I loved that period of time teaching there.
So take me back to when you said you first landed at the airport. Yankee Go Home signs?
Yankee Go Home signs, yeah.
Wow.
There was a
and
protest.
How did that? How did you process that? Because you were coming with the impression that there was a shortage of teachers, so you'd be kind of welcome, you know?
And generally speaking, at the schools, I said, look, it's not, I remember one principal going, it's not their fault that they're here. It's the government, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But after an 18-hour flight, I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
I wasn't going anywhere except to lie down.
Yeah.
and they took us to the Coogee Hostel, and you know what a great
first night is that. Sorry? Where you went first night?
That's first week.
Yeah,
and it was that too was great. You know, on the we'll walk to the beach and stuff like that. Oh, this is great. The whole country is a small little country. Oceans everywhere. Not in Green Valley, but nor was there a Green Valley. So I taught there for 5 years.
Right, and in that first week, what was your impression of Australia? That was the first time you'd ever visited Australia?
It was the first time I ever visited.
Yeah.
it seemed really nice. People seemed quite friendly for the most part.
Other than the ones holding the signs.
Other than the ones holding the signs, yeah. My co-workers. Other than that, they were fine.
It was teachers holding Yankee Go Home signs.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right.
From the union. They were strong Federation members. Why are they bringing out Americans?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Just let me lie down somewhere and I'll go home. Just whatever you want. If you can upgrade me to first class. Because, yeah. I know when some of the stories you've done, you know, the horrors of people getting here.
Yeah.
All I could complain about, the seating was a little cramped, you know?
No, but that's the immigrant experience is the whole spectrum.
Varies, yeah.
You know?
And that's the other, it was different also for me. I was only going to be here 2 years.
Right.
You know, 2 years and what the hell and go back because I couldn't get a teaching job, but with 2 years experience,
yeah,
they'd go, oh, look at this. And not only did he teach for 2 years, he taught in Australia.
Yeah, okay. So then what made you stay?
Well, it was too hard. So I stayed I was going to stay another 2 years, which I did. I mean, obviously, because I'm still here.
Yeah.
And then after a while, it occurred to me, in order to teach for less money in the States, I would then have to go, and within 5 years, I'd have to get either a master's degree or 30 graduate credits. So not only would I have to teach, I'd have to go back to university and learn exactly what I learned before, because I'm sure they do it just so they can give themselves jobs at that level. So I thought, you know, when I came out here, there were teachers 2 year trained, 3 year trained, and you know, we were the four. Oh, they've got a degree from university. If you walked to a classroom, you couldn't tell the difference between a 2 year, 3 year. You know, you just couldn't, which just shows how much of education is a waste of time, at least for teaching.
Right.
One of the things I noticed, I taught for 18 years, the amount of drinking cut down.
In Australia.
In Australia. The first year, every day, teachers would swarm to a place called the Stop and Rest in Mount Pritchard. Swarm. On Friday, if you didn't get there by 3:30, you didn't get a seat till about 5.
Right.
It was packed with teachers.
So if you were in school in the 70s, your teachers were just hammered.
And worse. After school. One teacher was sad. They said to him, if you don't stop drinking, you will be dead in 6 months. So he stopped drinking. Then he started again, and the doctors were right. He was dead in 6 months.
Damn.
Kevin. Yeah. Shame.
How was it in America at the time, like in teaching and students? How did that atmosphere compare to teaching and students here? Did you find a big difference?
Here, the discipline included kids could be caned, not by regular teachers, but by executive teachers.
Oh, so there was like designated caners.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. And I thought that was really barbaric because it was in the 1970s.
And that wasn't there in America.
No, not where I was. No, apparently in the Catholic schools, they had some pretty tough nuns. But no, in the public school, no, they couldn't touch you legally.
Right. What about like class sizes and stuff? Were they?
The class size I had were a lot bigger. It was something like, I don't know, high 30s or low 40s when I first came out.
And America was similar?
No, America was the place I did substitute teaching, a lot smaller. That was another thing because at the time they were very big on separation of church and state in America, you know, they
didn't.
And here they had scripture classes.
Oh, in Australia.
In Australia.
Right, right.
And my thought, well, you know, that's the ridiculous. It shouldn't be religion and schools mixed. And then I found out you got a half hour off during scripture. I don't think one day is enough. These kids need the religion. They should be doing it every day.
And then at that time, the hostility towards American teachers, did that die down after a year or two? Did you feel more
even
accepted
less
by your colleagues?
Well, you know how adorable I am. How could they hate me for any period of time? No, it was almost instant. The people were very nice. It was more what we represented, not individual.
Yeah.
And they realized it was the ones who came to the airport was, I think, for show, like, how dare you, but it wasn't directed personally at us. You know,
they weren't saying Peter's son flight, flight
just
three.
Just him. Yeah. The rest of you can stay. Peter, go home.
Was there something particular that made you stay?
I liked it here. I really didn't want to go back and have to look for a job. and do that 30 credits.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And so, you were getting settled into the lifestyle here.
I was getting settled. I became a very good drinker. First trip back drinking with my friends because Australian beer was a lot stronger.
Oh, okay. So was the drinking culture much more here than in America at the same time?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, that was another reason to stay. How am I going to drive to the airport? I'm way too. No. Yeah, no. I know a lot of Americans talk about this, but it was funny when the guy said, come to the pub and I'll buy you a schooner.
Yeah.
Which is, to me, was a boat, a large boat. I knew he wasn't going to buy me a boat. As lovely as I am and as nice of people as Australians were, I knew that was wrong. So it had to be something else. And sure enough, it was. The other thing, being a lot of Americans out here, I was able to play baseball out here.
Right.
And things like that. And it's funny. You know, when you're a kid, you have dreams. I always wanted to play for the Yankees.
Yeah.
And I think at 77, I played for the Canterbury Yankees.
There you go.
You see, when you pray to God, you need to be specific. No, the New York Yankees. I also wanted to live in Beverly Hills. I meant California, but I used to live near the one near Norway. It's a nice area.
Well, when you were getting off the plane, they were calling you a Yankee. So.
Yes, Yankee.
So you got there.
I got there.
The time that you were saying in Australia in the 70s, mm-hmm. then, did you get used to the weather here? Did you miss the New York winters?
Nobody misses the New York winters. Snow is great for one day.
I've never seen snow.
Oh, it's beautiful to sit there and look out the window and go, okay, and tomorrow it's sunny again.
Yeah.
It's just lovely. And in New York, when I was a kid with the pollution, the snow would fall after it stopped within an hour. It was filthy.
Wow.
It was black already. It was just ugly. But when it was first fell, it was beautiful and quiet, and Central Park was lovely in the winters. And now it's winter is not a pleasure. I don't miss the winters.
So you loved the Australian heat.
I like the climate because it's funny because you hear people go, well, these people all stay with people like themselves.
Yeah.
Which you do in the beginning. I mean, I hung out mostly with Americans.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Was it tricky to make friends outside of the Americans you knew initially?
The people I met out here were American. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know them from before.
Right.
None of the people, a couple people I met. Like when you get older, it's harder to make friends. Now, obviously you guys and I have a lot of Australian friends, obviously, and in the comedy business.
Yeah, but initially as you said, you gravitated to the people that you related to most.
That's right. People, because I've read studies, men form bonds over activities. So playing baseball with these other guys,
they
became friends. But after school, we bonded over drinking schooners.
What were some of the other colloquialisms you found trippy or weird?
I didn't at first hey, mate. I didn't like that. But now that I'm 73 and can't remember names, hey, mate.
It's perfect, right?
It's perfect for people my age. I also found people mumbled a lot here. I had trouble understanding them.
I think it's because they were all drunk.
Perhaps. I should have picked it up with the drooling. But, yeah. No, it was a good time to be here. I've got to say, it was still, I went in the 70s to the Alice Springs area.
Yeah, okay.
And that was a very racist area. One of the outskirts, not of town, you go for a several hour drive and you Glen something.
Right.
And aboriginals were buying beer from a different area than the white people.
Right, like they, fully segregated kind
fully
of.
Fully segregated, not inside, just to buy a carton.
Right.
Or a six, but whatever. No, they didn't have six pack. Whatever, wow. it was just like going back in time in America.
It felt like the 1950s that you grew up in the late 70s in Australia.
Yeah, right. It did. I mean, Aboriginals just got the vote, I think, in 1967.
Wow.
So in 76, that was only nine years they could vote.
And it's not like it became amazing as soon as they were given the vote. It was still terrible treatment. Yeah, yeah.
Well, like America is now, it's gone back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I was very happy here. I did miss America because I saw it through rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
I missed... that was the other thing. When people say, they bring their culture with them. Well, why not? I missed... You couldn't get baseball scores, American football scores.
Yeah.
there was nothing. Now, yeah. Now, you know, I can choose which game I want to watch on the computer and what have you. Back then, the New York Times might have an art, not the New York Times, sorry, the Sydney Morning Herald might have who won the World Series.
Right. And just as a little byline.
A little thing on the, they needed to fill a sports, bit on the sports break. Then they started giving the scores of the games, and they started giving the standings.
Right.
And now can watch, you know, I subscribe to Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
I watch the American football. And that's the kind of thing I missed, and that's been fulfilled. And I can now, and this is a big one, I can get good pizza now.
Yeah?
I have found a few places that have good pizza.
How long did it take from...
30 years. Literally. Because I think about it. 30 years to find good pizza.
So from the mid-70s to like 2005.
Something like that, yeah. At a restaurant, I couldn't believe it. Oh my God, this is good.
Now, New Yorkers have a thing about pizza where they're like, our pizza is better than Italian pizza.
Yes. Yes, our Chinese food is better than Chinese food. All of it. We're very ethnocentric.
Along those lines, I was going to ask you, from those from the 70s to, you know, the 80s and 90s, how did you see Australia change, like from, you know, immigrant eyes?
Okay, first of all, when I first got, everything closed on Saturday at noon and didn't open till Monday. So if you didn't know to go shopping, you could possibly starve to death because everything shut.
Yeah.
I mean, on a Sunday, I would go because Dimmick's and another bookstore were open on George Street, and I'd drive in because they were the only things open. Queen Victoria Building was a shell at the time.
Right.
And, you know, you'd park on George Street, no problem.
Yeah.
So that was terrible. Everything was closed except maybe a restaurant.
Right.
So I lived in Cabramatta before the influx of Southeast Asians. So there was an Italian restaurant, a couple milk bars and things like that.
Yeah.
I ended up teaching after I left Green Valley, Heckenberg Public School.
Yeah.
I moved to Lansvale Public School, which was in Cabramatta.
Yeah.
And I remember when this 1981, and the first three children from Southeast Asia came.
Right.
And then they, you know, I am so lucky. What a great experience.
Yeah.
To teach in a multicultural school. What an incredible experience. I taught literally 83 different cultures.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you'd have, you know, I coach soccer teams, and you'd see two Cambodian kids running down the field yelling at each other, and then two Vietnamese kids running back up the field yelling at each other. It was a great experience. But I learned that. I mean, you know, after teaching 83 different cultures, I learned it, you know, it didn't matter if a child had black skin or white skin, or where a child is from or what religion. All children are stupid. So, no, they were great. I really enjoyed it. Touch with them, a lot of them as well. And they've gone on to great, really great things.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
At what point did you start to feel like Australia was home?
2015, Trump comes down the escalator, says, I'm running for president, and then denigrates Mexicans for no apparent reason. That was his first speech. Mexicans, they come as rapists, and I'm sure there are a few good people. And I go, oh, God, look what America has become.
And before that, like the 90s and the 80s, you were maybe starting to...
90s, I had planned to go back.
Oh, yeah?
Because my mom was there, she wasn't well.
Right.
And I hadn't
didn't have anything to do with...
Oh, no, nothing bad with Australia.
Yeah.
You know, there was nobody abusing me, so I needed my mom around to tell me what I was doing wrong. But it would 2015, after he came down the escalator to applause, I thought, nope, not going back. Please don't let this happen here.
Right. Peter, do you have kids?
I've got a stepson and a stepdaughter.
Yeah, and they grew up in Australia?
They grew up in Australia. My wife was born in England.
Right.
She came out in 1967. I met her.
To Australia.
Australia.
So she came to Australia much before you had.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Okay.
So when we got married, I had two stepchildren living with us for a while.
Yeah.
And they seem okay. No, I get along really well. Actually, funny enough... one of them is a deputy principal now, and he also is into America. In fact, he played America, not because of me, but he played American football.
Right,
so that was
right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And my daughter is an SLO, they call it. I don't know what it is. I really need to listen more. something. But she works with disabled youngsters.
Right.
And she's studying to be a teacher as we speak.
Awesome.
Well, it keeps my wife busy doing paper. No, no, no.
What I was going to say was, do you think raising kids in, this would be the 80s and the 90s?
One was born in 76, one was born in 78.
Yeah, so the 80s. Do you think raising kids in the 80s in Australia and in America, how different do you think it would have been?
That's a very good question. I'm not sure if there were more. I guess the people I would have hung out with in America at the time were more lenient, more there, dear. And here they were stricter, which I think is a good thing.
Right.
In a way, not you can overdo it. But all these people I see now yelling, what about me? Grown-ups? You know, what about me? What about me? I think those are the kids that weren't beaten to a pulp. I mean, that weren't disciplined enough.
You said the discipline was like there was no caning in America.
I don't know everywhere. I don't.
Where substitute
the schools
teaching?
The schools I went to, I did casual substitute teaching at.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely not.
Right. What else would you say broadly was, you know, a culture shock or anything like that when you visited Australia? Did you take to the beach and did you try surfing and all that?
I've never tried surfing.
Were you afraid of the reputation of the animals?
No, I was afraid I'd hit my head on the board and kill myself. I always thought of New York as a rat race. It was just... When I came out here,
right.
I felt like king of the rats. I was the rat king. But you said you'd be here today. Where are you? Oh, I didn't feel like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
To get some work done or anything like that took forever.
Right. Here it was more laid back, you felt.
Laid back. It's a sunny day. I won't be coming. And that was my surgeon. No. You know, I was under for the...
Which is interesting because Sydney to a lot of people feels like the rat race, but then I guess New York is a much more intense version of that.
Well, I don't know so much now, but then in the 70s and 80s, it was just so laid back and slow here.
Yeah.
As I said, you could park anywhere in Sydney on a Sunday. Because
nobody
was there.
Nobody everyone was there. Now is listening is jealous of... They're looking for parking right now.
That's right.
They're listening to us.
Yeah, I may have parked illegally tonight. Coming, I'm not sure. There is an orange barrier, but I'm just going to pretend I didn't see it. the bright orange barrier.
Seeing the events that happen in America, like acts of terror, shootings, and things like that, do you look at that through an American prism or an Australian prism?
I think for those things, probably more American, because I've seen how it's deteriorated over time, particularly if something happens in New York City, because I still have friends there. 9/11, of course, was the worst one.
Were you in Australia when that happened?
I was in Australia. I'd just come out of hosting a comedy trivia night.
Right.
So I heard about one plane had gone into a building.
Right.
I got home and I turned on the news immediately and I see a plane going into the building. And I thought that was the second plane, but I thought they were simulating the first plane going in. So that came as a shock. Then I found out I had friends who, one friend was saw it happen from his window at 12th Street.
Wow.
And they said, come to the window and the plane's in it. And then he saw the second plane at a certain distance away, and it affected him to the point where he had to see a psychiatrist.
Wow.
I had another friend, and this is interesting, I'll ask you. One friend was four blocks away. One friend was three blocks away. He was in another building on a high floor because all the buildings there are tall. He saw the smoke or something. He had to make a choice whether to take the elevator or the stairs. What would you have done?
So he was in...
He was in, not the World Trade Center, but a building three blocks away. He could see it happening.
Right.
And he knew he had to get out of that building and leave.
Yeah.
So he had a choice, elevator or stairs. What would you have taken?
I think when people panic, everyone flocks to the elevator because that feels like the fastest way down, right?
Okay, see, I would have gone for the stairs.
Stairs are the safer way to go.
Well, that's what I would have done in case the cable breaks. I don't want to be in that elevator.
Yeah.
He took the elevator, and he's fine. In fact, I spoke to him today. We were talking about baseball. So when this happened, I got in touch through whatever different ways.
Yeah.
with all my friends in America, everybody, nobody was in that building. Close, but nobody was in it. I took that breath of relief. Then I found out a friend of mine here, Simon Kennedy, his mom was on the plane that went into the Pentagon.
Tragic.
So when people go, oh, it was faked. No, it wasn't. And it really annoys me, and I'm sure it annoys, it angers him. When people go, no, that it was, it's all part of a plot. That plane went in there. She was on it. But it's ironic that of all the people I know in America, none of them were affected directly other than seeing it, and yet somebody here, his mom.
Wow.
It's funny, he went to, they had anniversary is the wrong word, but people came like a year later.
Remembrance.
Sorry?
Memorial,
And he met George W. Bush, was there, and all he was really interested in was Linda Carter, the woman who played Wonder Woman. She was at the same function. Right. And that's all he was interested in. So through tragedy.
So as you were saying, when you would see things.
Still.
News in America, you look at it from the eyes of a local New Yorker. And do you feel it maybe pervades too much into our news here?
I think maybe, but from my point of view, from a selfish point of view, no.
Oh, right.
This is what. Plus, I can watch American news here too. That's another thing I get.
Yeah.
But maybe too much here. But I mean, it is too much here for Australians. Why? But as an American, I say the mass shootings literally daily.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always a school, but they do have them, and just the way. I mean, the Texas Republican Party wants to get rid of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. They're not even kidding around anymore. They're not even pretending. Yeah, we don't want everybody to vote. And so when I look at that, I get angry because I see the country I'm from absolutely going off the precipice.
Yeah. Whereas when you look at probably the news that America is getting about Australia, it's radio silence for decades, and then, oh, actually, Australia's on fire now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Flooding. I get emails. Are you affected by the floods?
Right.
A little bit. Bushfires, a little bit, but not like Lismore. But so they think I'm treading water.
Your American friends are imagining you in a schooner.
In a schooner. Finally, yeah. Drinking beer from some sort of vessel.
Peter, you've been a wonderful guest, friend. And
a good friend,
I loved having you on. And this has been a fascinating conversation. So
thank you.
No, thank you so much.
Yeah, I wish my life had been harder.
My First Year on Aussie Soil is an SBS original podcast. It's created and produced by me, Suraj Kolaka, and Danny Giles. You can find more info at sbs.com.au/myfirstyear.